Convene the meeting. Mario, how are you?
Good, good. Hope everyone is fine and safe.
Yep, trying our best. All right, in the interest of time, Kathy has to leave a bit early, so I'm going to try to go ahead and expedite the agenda items that require a vote, trustee vote. So if we can put item one on hold, and then the investment report, and go to item two, approval of the minutes of the September meeting. Is there a motion?
I move that we accept the minutes from the September meeting.
Motion's been made.
Motion.
By Kathy?
By Kathy.
Is there a second to the motion?
I second the motion. Mario.
Mario is second the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 All right, again, by voice, can you identify yourself?
Aye.
Kathy is an aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Susan
Mark Petrosimone is an aye. Michael Mario Gorman, is an aye.
Yes.
Mike Gormany?
Aye.
Okay. If we can go on to administrative matters, I think, Carolyn, that item C, Northern Trust Resolution, that's the update of our records. We're going to have a vote on that to officially have that accepted by the trustees, right?
This is Carolyn Cohn. Yes, that's correct. So
what happens is occasionally the custodial bank asks the pension plan to update the records because the people have come and gone, and some of that stuff is stale, and they want to have the most contemporary records available that are accurate. That being the case, that paperwork has been done by staff and by our attorney, and it's presented here for you with the updated information on it. I think you've perused it. So we have to officially accept that paperwork. The trustees have to accept that so we can send it to the custodial bank, and that'll be the most recent information that they have on file. Is there anything that anybody want to make a motion to do that?
This is Carolyn. It's just, there are two things I wanted just to say.
Go right ahead, Carolyn.
So what this is it's the trustees authorizing Leanna, Taylor, Eva, Michael, and Robin Latson to give instructions to Northern Trust about payment. And then Northern Trust has a system in which they authenticate the people that I have just mentioned, so that if they think that there's some strange order coming from one of those people, then they would contact Leanna, Taylor, Eva, Michael, or Joe Montaigne to say, does the person who gave the strange order have the authority to do that? And there's a typo, and I'm sorry, in that further resolve, the very last one says that the pension administrator should say or the SERF secretary. So Northern Trust has asked that we do this resolution.
Correct. Are there any questions on Carolyn's comments? If not, can we entertain a motion?
I make a motion to accept the authorization.
Mario has made a motion. Can I hear a second?
Mark Petrosimone, I second it.
Mark has seconded it.
Discussion.
Is there a discussion on the motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a friendly amendment to the motion.
Go right ahead.
That I support Mario's motion to accept it as amended, because you're going to change that of to or, correct?
Yes, thank you, Kathy. That's correct. That's very helpful.
I accept the friendly amendment.
Very good. All right, is there any further discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Identify yourself, please.
Hi, this is Kathy.
Kathy's an aye.
Susan.
Yeah. Mark.
Aye.
Susan.
Aye.
Mike Gormany.
Aye.
And Mark, you're an aye, right?
Aye.
Okay. Rich, Item A, year-end GASB reporting. There's no vote required on that, right? It's just basically you're going to be giving us a report on it.
Correct.
No, I think Jerry might need a vote on it if they choose to go to do it. Because remember, there's a cost involved?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to bring up. You had indicated that when we get to that, if we require a vote, I believe it's going to be because of the proviso that you gave us, where the auditors may not require additional work in order to satisfy them, the city auditors. That being the case, you would have to do something twice, do the calculations twice.
Correct.
So there would be, you had indicated there might be, that probably would be a charge of about $5,000 extra shared by the funds, about $2,500 apiece. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That being the case, if this requires a vote, which I think Leon is right, the trustees of our board would have to, I don't see how we can do anything but that because the auditors are in the driver's seat on this. In order to satisfy what the auditors want, you would have to do some additional work than which you normally require under the contract you have with the city. Are there any questions that the trustees have on that potential additional cost of $2,500 in order for them to present the report in a way which satisfies the city auditors? You want to make any comment on that, Rich? Quickly.
Yeah, just to be a little bit more specific, the issue is going to be a mortality table. There was a recent change that just came out that was not reflected in our last eval because it wasn't available. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing an experience study this year to figure out which table to use, but the auditors may require us to make a change before the experience study is done and implemented.
When do you think you'll know from the auditors if they actually want that change?
Well, we're scheduled to get the GASB reports out, I'll say, by year end. So presumably we'll do it based on the current mortality table we're using, and we'll hear back from them, I'll say, probably fairly quickly.
All right, then let's say this. In the event that there has to be an additional cost in order to complete the audit, can the trustees indicate whether they're receptive to the paying that charge? And I don't see how it's going to be avoided.
I make a motion that we accept a charge of $2,500.
A second. This is Kathy.
Mario's made the motion. Kathy has seconded it. Is there a discussion on that motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
My name, excuse me. Identify yourself, please. I'm going to call the names out, right? Be easier. Kathy.
Aye.
Mario.
Aye.
Mike.
Aye.
Mark.
Aye.
Who did I miss?
Susan.
Susan, I'm sorry.
Aye.
Here you are. Okay.
I see you. I know. Susan. Bad lighting. Very bad lighting here.
All right. Securities, let's see, pension portal update. I'm just trying to see what we have to vote on. Let's go to item. I think
maybe just the bills, Jerry.
Yeah, that's what we go to right now. Item 8, payment of bills. If the trustees have had the opportunity to review the bills and if there's a vote in order to pay them, we'd appreciate it.
Well,
here. I'm sorry, get it.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Mark Petrosimo, I make a motion to approve the payment of bills.
Mark has made the motion. Is there a second to that motion?
This is Kathy. I'll second.
Kathy Graves has made the motion to second it. Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Right. Again, I'm sorry. I can't get used to this remote thing. As far as the vote itself, Mike, are you and I?
Aye. Yep.
Mark?
Aye.
Mario?
Aye.
Susan?
Aye.
Kathy?
Aye.
Very good. So, Kathy, I think you can feel free at any point. I know you said you had, unfortunately, a way to its end. So I think we've satisfied the vote portion of the agenda. And whenever you feel like you have to leave, I mean, I know it's not the type of thing you want to leave to go to, but yeah. You have the votes on it.
Trust me, I wouldn't go if I didn't have to.
No, I know that. It's horrible things.
Yeah.
All right. On B, under administrative matters, Rodden's, Geller, Rudman, Dowd is the, as you know, we've had multiple firms in the past that represented the city pension plans and monitoring losses that they have suffered because of sometimes nefarious action by our investors. And they actually get involved. They have gotten involved with class action lawsuits by the various pension plans under that class action, who are going after the investors that turn sour to get back as much money as we can. Last week we heard from, was it Leviton Supro? At one of the meeting before last, they are the law firm that actually is still used to pursue law cases on a class action level. One of the first firms, I think the first firm that we actually had that the city brought in to handle the class actions goes back about 11 years, right?
I think
about
so.
11 years goes back. Was Robbins, Geller, Rudman, Dowd, and they had last year, they originally were brought in exclusively for the police and fire fund. Last year, they amended the contract that we have with them. And in effect, they now basically they've been providing services since 2019 with the amended contract to both funds, police and fire and the SURF fund. Difference being now that they do not actively pursue the litigation of the class actions anymore, because it's my understanding Laura Stein is the key representative of the firm. Her mother, who unfortunately just recently passed away, Sandy, wonderful, beautiful lady. She was the person who started the firm. Am I right, Laura?
She was involved.
She was one of the big
early years. Yes.
She's here today to just basically let herself be known to you and explain, give you a basic explanation as to what they basically do to safeguard looking at making sure that our custodial bank also pursues any class action suits on behalf of the Police and Fire Fund and the SURF Fund. Did I say that right, Laura?
Well, we will be providing litigation services as well as monitoring services. So right. We'll be complementing what Leviton Supro does. And we were actually the first firm to develop this program. We are the largest firm in this industry. And please allow me to introduce my partner, who's also on the Zoom call, Bill Kavanaugh. Bill, I think if you say hello, you'll pop up on the screen.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. I hope you
so,
I don't know.
Can you all see Bill?
His video's not there, but his sound is on.
Okay. All right. Okay. No problem.
He's getting the hang of this stuff too. Yeah, sorry.
So let's see if that.
Here you are.
Okay. Good morning, everybody.
Good Thank morning.
You. Yeah. Good morning.
I promised Mr. Sagnella we'd be brief, so I really want to open it up to questions, but we did have the honor of presenting to you late last year and gave a brief overview, so I'll just quickly touch on what we do, just to clarify, and I know you got a good briefing from the other firm, but the concept here is that we monitor the publicly traded equity portfolio and alert you to any situations where your investments have been affected by corporate misconduct. And if you lost money due to corporate fraud, we advise you whether to take an active role, which would involve a litigation stance, and that would be a very rare recommendation. We actually only advise the fund once in all the years that we've been working with you, or a passive role to simply collect a claim at the end of what would be a litigation brought by another investor. And if that case is successful, you are entitled to your pro rata share.
And we advise through a monitoring report system that both Mr. Stagnella and Liana are receiving on a monthly basis. And we had a pre-meeting already about the best way of reporting to them. And they've advised us how they want to receive those reports. And we're going to circle with them to make sure that they're getting the information they need and that information is getting through to the custodial bank. So you're collecting every claim that you're eligible for, because these claims are an asset of the fund. And these losses that you've incurred due to corporate fraud should be pursued, because they're the assets and the money owed to your members, your beneficiaries. So what we do, being 200 lawyers and 300 staff in 10 offices all day long, is just pursue securities fraud of publicly traded companies. We've recovered $60 billion in the years that we've been working in this field. Still to date, the largest recovery in history is the Enron litigation that our firm prosecuted. And we I'll only practice in this area of law. My partner, Bill, actually represented funds like yours before coming to work with us. And I'll let him comment on what he thinks we're adding to your fund right now.
Thanks, Laura. I really have not much to add. And in the interest of time, just to reinforce what Laura has indicated.
Hey, Joe, this is Mario Zangari. I'm a trustee. How much have we recovered through your efforts of this $60 billion?
Laura, correct me if I'm wrong. I thought it was in the neighborhood of like $139,000 over the last number of years.
That's actually for police and fire.
Okay.
So yeah, That'll be next week. We have recovered about, I think, $200,000 for public employees over the years that we've been working for you. But that's through the claims process that you would work with your custodial bank. So we've been a reporting service. We're not doing a recovery program. So we're a information program. We're alerting you to these situations.
Us with any concrete, you're just telling us what happened.
Right. We're information only, cost-free information only, alerting you to these situations, advising you of them. Does that answer the question?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Again, if you recall, I think it was two meetings ago, we had, I can't pronounce that firm.
Lavaton.
Okay.
Good guys. I know them.
Because I was concerned that the last report I got from them showed a large amount of what's claimed to be fund losses for police and fire and surf to the tune of like $380,000, like $190,000 apiece. And I said, oh, wait a minute. Now, as fiduciaries, we can't just get that information and say, well, that's too bad, so sad. And that's why I had them in to talk to us about it. And because this is an issue, I think, that requires as fiduciaries, we actually look at this thing pretty closely. I had asked that Laura and Bill to come and just present themselves to the board so they get an idea of who these people are that are representing our best interest.
Yes, you've got two firms now tracking these claims. And the thing that I think we add to the table is that we are actually prosecuting a third of the cases. We've done the original investigation of the third of those cases. Being the largest firm in this field, we actually have the investigative in-house power to originate the cases. So you're getting the information firsthand from the source. So you've got teams in place to alert you from the source day one to tell you that you have an interest in these cases, whether you should take an active or a passive role, and to track your claims because they're assets of the fund and make sure that they get back to the fund and you have them returning to your members as much as possible.
And correct me, but I think Northern Trust also supposedly is supposed to be doing that monitoring themselves.
Yes, and the reports that we're generating for you, and Liana is so great at screen sharing, so I don't know if she'd be willing to share the settlement report that we generate every month. The reports that we generate every month alert you to every... every settled class action that's out there and what it what impact it had to your portfolio. And this would allow your custodial bank to use it as a checklist to tell them if you're eligible to collect on that particular claim that month. So this is like belt and suspenders to what their internal systems provide. And most sophisticated institutional investors are permitting their client representative from their custodial bank to use this as sort of information backup so that they can make sure they're collecting everything that you're eligible to collect. So you're getting an early warning system with our monitoring report and a checklist from the settlement report at the end of the case. So you're getting covered in the beginning and you're getting covered at the end of every class action out there to make sure that you're not missing any money that's being left on the table. Thanks, Liana. I think we're good.
Okay.
Leona, if we got a report that we get every month that how much we collect, is it ever provided to us as trustees?
What was that question, Mario?
Is there any line where we are told how much we recover from the lawsuits or the claims? I've never seen a report that says that, you know, we collected $100 from our lawyers in New York or whatever, Robinson. So
the collection would come from the custodial bank, and we might be able to view that from the custodial statements. So I could try to work with your custodial bank to see that. Mr. Ciampini, do you have any information on that?
No, we did not provide that. That would be something that First State Trust would have to provide.
Okay. I could try to see if we could get a tally for you on an annual basis.
Listen to this presentation, but I've never seen a report except once where we were the lead plaintiff and they had to come to us to talk about it. But that's the last time I remember ever seeing anything on what we recovered.
How was that report that was just shown on the screen generated?
So that report is about every case filed and whether it impacted this particular portfolio.
About every case. About how much we recovered.
And that's different. That report says that you were not impacted, which is actually a good thing. You don't want to be impacted. That means you lost money. That's the best looking portfolio report.
Okay, so we haven't had many of bad deals. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's actually the best kind of report you want to get. The less you hear from us, the better.
Well, I'm sure we're not perfect, so I'm just trying to find out which ones we've actually covered up.
Okay.
We're not perfect.
Mario, that's why at the meeting before last, I did make sure that the trustees were provided with a detailed report on the police and fire and on search that did exactly what you're talking about. It presented the names of the investments that were pretty much, nefarious. They had dirt under their nails. And so you did look at reports because this is the first time that we approach that level of possible loss.
Okay.
Any other?
Going forward, we'll be on board to alert you to situations if they do arise, and that's really where we come in. We're a watchdog, if you will, to tell you if there are situations where within your portfolio you've been affected.
Okay. Very good, Laura and Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you both for attending. Your time.
We appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Have a nice day, guys.
Thank you very much.
On item D, securities litigation update. This is, again, along the lines of what we're discussing right now. Just to let you know that for information only, we're still working with Latiton and Socorro to try to give us some reports in a fashion that will give you what we're looking for in terms of how much has been lost, how much assets and stuff have been lost, how much have been recovered, what the costs were for the, when I say the cost, it's not something that the plan pays for, basically. But we want that report that'll give you the information.
Hey, Jerry, it's Leanna. Can I just add, Marissa had sent an email, and she said that they began monitoring both funds as of February 1st, 2016. Mm-hmm. And the total losses in all filed cases since the beginning of monitoring for SURF was $1,349,668. That was the LIFO. But she said that they will not be able to provide the additional information that you requested, like all the recoveries and all the security cases, related attorney's fees, because she said it'd be an extremely time-consuming project.
So what portion of that $1 million did we get?
That's all her email said, unfortunately.
I spoke to Marissa offline, and for what it's worth, and she explained to me why it was so poor. I mean, as everybody knows, they're working gratis. I mean, they're not being paid anything. And for them to calculate each individual suit, they have to reach out to every litigation firm that litigated each firm. They have to look at, you know, there's a lot of work. It's extensive. It's not something where they just have a monitoring system where they can just pull up a report. So they'd have to reach out into each case, get the filings for each case, look at SURF's pro rata share in each case. So it's just not something that's plausible. I think Laura had a good idea. If you look at your custodial bank, you know, for the First State Trust, to see if they have some report, they'll be able to monitor, you know, all monies that come in and out of the fund. So when you have a check from one of these returns, I'm sure there's some way they'll be able to tabulate that. So I think that's a good way to answer the question that Mario posed.
So we have to talk to
First State Trust.
First State Trust. So they would be the people that would have that information.
I believe so. I don't know that factually, but it sounds right. And I think Laura said she was going, before she jumped off, she said she was going to try to get that number for you.
Okay.
Well, I'm a little confused about something, because when you said these law firms, when they pursue litigation, and let's say the judge sits down and says, all right, SURF was, there's a $50 million settlement against a company, and there's like 25 pension plans that are involved. And the judge says, of the $50 million, we're going to get back $10 million, and we're going to give it back to the pension plans involved based on, you know, what their share of the losses. Now, the law firms, I understand, do pretty well on that, because the judge that determines what the fee is going to be for the law firm. And I think in some cases it could be significant. I mean, it could be up to 20%. Remember, Mario, we went through this once before, where they had
it's a third plus expenses.
Right. So when somebody from a lot of time, Socorro says, well, we can't give you this information in such detail because we're not making any money. I don't understand where they're getting off saying that.
Well, Jared, if I may, they you know, you have to remember each security, so just think of thousands and tens of thousands of securities in your portfolio. There are hundreds of different law firms like Labaton Sutra. So each one of these cases, all these monitoring firms do is tell you, hey, this particular security is under investigation, this particular company is under investigation. And those are all brought by various law firms. It's not Labaton. So these are not the ones that they're going after. So what the information that you're requesting, all they're doing is saying, hey, SHRP was impacted on these various cases, or may not have been impacted on these various cases. They're not all the ones that Labicon is bringing forth. So it's not like Labicon's earning money on all those. How they actually earn money is if there's one that they identify as, hey, this is...
I hear what you're saying, but I mean, we have a law firm that responded to it. We had them here 2 years ago, and we told them what we wanted, and they're responding, and they only gave us a piece of it. And the piece is that since 2016, Liana, was that SURF alone, or was that police and fire and SURF?
That was for SURF. She gave this a separate number for police and fire.
What was police and fire?
About the same, $1,351,752. Right,
that's a significant amount of money. And I think as trustees, I don't know how we do it, but I think, you know, Mario's right. All right, we know that the fund has been involved in some kind of chicanery since 2016, and it looks like on paper the fund lost $1 million. That's nothing to sneeze at. But as trustees, that's only part of the picture. We want to know how much the fund got back of that $1 million. And that's why I don't see where we're getting that from her. And I don't understand why we can't. I mean, as trustees, it's one thing to know and to lament that we potentially lost $1 million. It's another thing to tell the people you represent, well, I don't know how much of that we're going to get back. I mean, it's not complete the way they're doing it. Because from what she's
I understand what you're saying.
We're never going to know how much of that money.
I'm in the way, you know, carrying water for any of these firms, but I guess. Go ahead, sorry.
Was that? I can't hear you too well, Derek.
Hi. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure I understand the service. And so, as I understand it, what Laura's firm is doing is they're monitoring. They aren't actually filing cases. They're just like a radon monitor. I mean, they just kind of go out there. They see what actions there are. They let us know that these are the actions for companies and whether or not we should pursue a class action suit. Do I have that correct?
Basically, right.
Carolyn, I think they do litigate certain of these class actions.
Okay. Yeah, if it gets to that.
I think if they identify one, sorry.
Right. And they may, on very rare occasions, as apparently they did before, one of the firms did ask that we be the named plaintiff. They like to have municipal pension funds as the name plaintiff.
Carolyn, we were the lead litigant.
Yeah, lead plaintiff.
In the lawsuit that we brought against A&P.
Right.
That was the one because we had the largest stock in that particular investment. They asked us, which is what she's talking about. They're going to monitor these things, and if they think that we are entitled to a lion's share of litigation, they're going to recommend to us that we be the lead litigant.
Correct.
So I have a question, which is, what do we pay for the monitoring service?
You don't pay anything.
The monitoring's free.
Yep.
Okay.
And to answer Jerry's question, not to, you know, blur the point, but that is the reason that, you know, the way it was explained to me, it would take thousands of legal hours to put together a comprehensive list of all the various cases through all the various firms to see what that $1 million is comprised of. So they have the ability to monitor and say, okay, all these securities have cases on them, but to then take, you know, even if it's a legal assistant, to go out there and reach out to each one of the law firms that actually brought the cases to the courts, found the, you know, what proration was delivered, so on and so forth. So I think the combination, to answer your question, Gary, I agree with what you're saying. You have Labaton Sugarello and the firm that just presented monitoring. They tell you, okay, you've been impacted by X number of dollars. And then hopefully Laura Stein can then go to our custodial bank and say, okay, how much money over the past year have you gotten in on these? So at least you'll be able to say, okay, up to $1 million or million plus, you've got, you know, $150,000 back or $200,000, whatever the, you know, the amount back is. I think that's probably the way.
Laura is going to be presenting to police and fire next week. Mm-hmm. She has a report that basically is what we asked Marissa to do. She had no problem getting the figures, you know, almost instantaneously. And she said that, you know, she's going to have the amount that, you know, police and fire was involved with. And of that amount, they received, I think, almost $200,000 back on it. So I can't understand if she can get that information pretty readily, why Labyrinth Socorro saying that we can't do that. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know, Jerry. I don't know. I don't. I mean, that's a question you propose. Again, I don't know either one of these firms intimately at all.
No, I know.
I don't know.
This is what we got to ask them. But I mean, I don't understand that, how as trustees, because again, Mario, if you remember with that A&P case, right? When the law firm came before us, the judge had recommended that they receive, I think, 25% on that. That's a lot of money. You know, some of these cases, look at Enron or something, you got 500, 100 million. If the law firm should get 25% of that, I don't have any sympathy for them saying that, you know, we can't do all this work, it's a lot of work. They're making a lot of money on these cases. And remember, Mario, when the judge recommended 25%, you said, you refused that, and you said that you recommended to the trustees they only allow 20. And that's what we did. That's a lot of money that these companies, these law firms are making on these transactions. So I'm going to talk to Marissa again, but I don't accept that, what she's saying, that they can't get that. How can you be a trustee and they're going to tell you what you lost, they're not going to tell you what you got back? It doesn't make any sense.
That's true, Jerry. That's why I started the discussion, because it doesn't make any sense. And they have that information.
They have it. I'm telling you, Laura had it. We were on the phone with her, and we asked her if she could have that. And the next day, she had it in the report for us.
Then what was she speaking of that she said we'd have to reach out to the custodial banks about?
I can't hear you that well, dear. You gotta.
I said, then what was she speaking? Okay, I said, then what was she referring to reaching out to the custodial banks about that? If Laura had this number, what is she getting from First State Trust?
I don't know. Yeah, all I know is I asked her for the information, and she had it the next day. Well, I think we're seeing something where, again, the trustees have to know how much money they're getting back, how much money was lost initially, how much money they're getting back. And I think they have to know how much these law firms made on these transactions. Did the other trustees agree with me, or am I the only one?
No, I agree. I'm concerned because if somebody hears this number that we lost, or somebody stole over a million dollars from our trust,
right?
They say, what are the trustees doing? Did they fall asleep? Did they do whatever? Maybe they sue us for not getting a recovery. We don't know about what we don't get any numbers on recovery.
Maybe the answer is to ask, as Derek was saying, is that the custodial bank has that information, and maybe they can run a report as part of their service to us. And tell us.
I think that this $1 million reserve. I thought I heard that they said there's $1 million in losses, but there hasn't been any settlement of them right now. So we don't know how much we're going to get back.
Well, they're basically saying if you talk to the custodial bank and they received $100 check, they can tell us they got $100 on such and such a case, because they know where it came from.
Right.
Well, I think you need to talk to the custodial bank to tell us, to send us a monthly report, and maybe go back 12 months and show us what happened.
Right. That's where it needs to come from.
Yeah, I remember, I think at the last meeting, I said that we were going to work with the custodial bank to try to get some of the information. But the custodial bank's not making 25% on the loss.
Yeah, but I think that report should be.
I think I know what the trustees want and what we have to do to get it. Is there any other discussion on item D? If not, if we go on to E, pension portal update. Is Rich here? Rich is off.
No, I had Rich leave. This is Leanna. Just because this was basically just last month, we explained to them what was going on with the portal, and some of the trustees had asked a couple questions about what other municipalities are doing. So we had a meeting with everybody on the portal. We do it every other week, and we brought those questions up. And they said nothing is set in stone. So if we were to say employees could only get, say, three official estimates per year, it's not set in stone for the remainder of, you know, the existence. We're able to change it at any time. Or also, if a specific individual hits their three required estimates and then doesn't actually retire and needs a fourth one because now they do want to retire, it's not that they can't get it. They can go into the system and get it. That's not a problem. And they said other municipalities about the size of us also have those limits on it. People can get unlimited estimates, but the official calculations, they usually can only get about two or three per year. So it's right on track with what we suggested at last month's meeting.
Just to let the trustees know that myself, Leanna, representatives of the IT division of our office meet every 2 weeks with the people from the actuarial firm. And it's going along very well. You know, we are doing this thing in segments, and hopefully within the next 6-7 months, I think you might have an operational portal. Again, it's a little more difficult with the COVID communications system. Anything else, Leanna, on that?
Nope, that's it. Unless the trustees had any further questions.
Any questions on that? All right, item 4, contribution withdrawal, information only. Is there a question on that? If not, item 5. Let's see. I think we could do item 5, 6, and 7, information only. These are item 5 is death after retirement of retirees. Item 6 is the death after retirement of survivors. And item 7 is death while an active employee. And if I can have, I can ask the trustees for a moment of silence for the repose of these souls. Just note that Howard Hunt used to be an employee of ours in the pension office for about 19 years. But I know all these people here, they were all good souls. Rest in peace. Item 8, payment of bills, we've done. Item 9, is there any old business that we have to conduct with the board? Item 10, any new business for the board to consider? All right, I think I've pretty much hit everything. We're gonna return back to item 1 and turn it over to Derek and to Dave. B&D.
Thank you. So I have three different reports. Most importantly, I guess we could start here, which is good. Trustee Whetstone last month, I believe, asked about alternatives and how we come about. Can everybody hear me okay? Sure, I know Jared said that you couldn't hear me. Coming through okay?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Trustee Whetstone last month, I believe, asked about alternatives and how adding alternatives to the portfolio affected overall. And I thought this chart was good. I mean, this is something that we look at often in the industry. And this is basically what we call an efficient frontier. And I guess that's like a black line. The first lowest curve, that blackish line, is an efficient frontier of just a purely stock and bond portfolio. You see all the way to the upper right, if the portfolio was 100% stocks, all the way to the bottom, 100% bonds. The vertical axis is rate of return, And the horizontal axis is standard deviation, or we call it annualized volatility. And an efficient portfolio, typically, depending on your mix, you know, anywhere from 50-50 bonds to stocks to 60-40, 70-30, and so on and so forth, moves typically along the curve. You know, the higher the stock portion, the higher the return typically, and then, but also the farther out to the right represents the higher volatility. If you look at the various colored lines, that's when you start to add alternatives to the portfolio. So the whole point of adding alternatives to a portfolio of this nature is to ultimately increase return without increasing the risk. So as you can see, each one of those pieces represents various different editions of alternatives. So the end goal, if you say that 50-50 bond stock portfolio, the middle of the curve, if you change that to 40 bond, 40 stock, and 20% uncorrelated alternative investments, what it means by uncorrelated is neither a stock nor a bond. So something like a private real estate or a private equity, some sort of private investment that doesn't really work in the same direction that a stock or bond works. As you can see, that would, in theory, increase your return. So you see the dot is higher and actually reduces the risk. So what the different mixes are, that's something we discuss as a panel, as a group. That's what your investment policy statement is for. And that's what we do in conjunction with all of you at the table. So this is just conceptual. It's obviously theoretical, but it just shows, I think, visually why we add alternatives to the mix. And alternatives, it's a big universe of alternatives. And again, we are bound by the investment policy statement and the investment guidelines. So it's not anything draconian where we're going to have, you know, 50 or 40% alternatives. It's, I believe, in the 20 to 30% range at most. So I don't know if this helps visualize or helps answer your question, Trustee Webstone, from last month. Does this help?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much.
Great. I'm glad I could find that. So then if we can move on to the SURF 2020 Q3. Okay, so this is just, I want to go back. That's fine. Here it is there. Right here. This is just shows the different indices, different markets. And again, what I'd like to point out, excuse me, year to date, there's still quite a bit of divergence between growth and value, large cap, mid cap, and small cap. As you can see, the range of returns is very vast. It's starting to tighten up now, though. Some interesting things happen in the market, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But for right now, it's clear that the mega caps, the large growth stocks, are the ones that are charging forward and making the most returns. And you can see that very, very easily. At if you look at the second one down, it's the S&P 500, which everybody knows. And the white line under that is the S&P 500 equal weight. So what that means is if the S&P 500, you have the FANG stocks, everybody knows, the large, you know, Googles, Facebooks, Amazons of the world, because those are market, that index is market cap weighted, the larger the company, the larger the impact on the index that it has, and those companies have all done very, very well. So you can see the return for the S&P 500 is just under 5.6% year to date through September 30th. If you took the market cap weighting out of the S&P 500 and just weighted all the companies, all, you know, 500 companies equally, equal weight, look at the return. It goes down to negative 4.75. So what that tells us is that there really is just a handful of companies driving these returns. And that is what's been in that. So if you have any diversification in your portfolio at all, you've actually been a hindrance on performance. So our job is very difficult because, you know, diversification is quote unquote safety to the portfolio. But when you have to diversify and it actually is interest in the portfolio, it's hard to watch. But we do believe in mean reversion. So we think that, you know, things will normalize at some point. And like, look at just large cap growth. So the Russell 1000 growth, the fourth line down, or fifth line down, and then Russell 1000 value. 24.3 for year to date versus a negative 11.58. You know, large cap value stocks historically are the bedrocks of your portfolio. Those are the large quality companies that pay dividends, that are usually the safest of the stocks in a stock portfolio, and those things have done very poorly because, again, everybody is chasing the momentum of a large cap growth stock. So I just wanted to show you that just to put things in perspective a bit. If you scroll down a page or two, please. Okay, so this is the actual portfolio. So the dark blue line is their fund. You see it's almost $179 million. For the 1 month, it's down 1.63. And you can see the policy index and the passive index, where we outperformed both for the 1 month. 3 months, we're a little bit more in line. Year to date, we have some really solid outperformance. You can see the fund is up 6.91% year to date versus its policy and benchmark of 1.5, 1.22. Fiscal year to date, 5.55. We're on 1 year, just under 12%. So we're getting some really good returns from our active managers, from some of our active allocations, some of the things we've done throughout this crisis, so to speak, is we've tilted the portfolio to growth. We've gone up capitalization. We've reduced our small mid-cap exposure. There's some really stellar active managers on international. So that's really helped drive these returns to, I'd argue, some of the best around. I don't know many funds that are going to beat this return. So you see the 1 year is just under 12%. Annualized 2 years, 7.2. Annualized 3 years, 8.02. So we're getting back into our target bogey of that 7.75. Annualized over 3 years. So that's a good thing. Obviously, inception to date is including the financial crisis and so on and so forth. So that's got a ways to go, but we're still working on getting those numbers up. I won't spend a lot of time here. Just want to show you that we're a little bit, we're about equal weight right now between growth and value. Large growth and value just at about 19% each. Small caps at 3%. So one of the things I'm going to talk about moving forward is what we're starting to see is participation from the small caps. So when markets start to get a little bit more healthy, you start to see participation from the small and mid-cap stocks. So we've purposely underweighted your small-cap stocks. This past month, so this is through September 30. In October, small caps have started to participate a bit. Over the last 3 months, you can see they're up 6.53. So small caps are starting to, kind of come back into favor a bit. And we have this active manager, Fuller & Baylor, very, very sound manager. We're thinking about adding some money to small cap at this point. We're a little bit ahead of the curve, and I'll talk about that next. But, I just want to call that into your attention. Just to remind you that we only have about 3% weighting to small cap, which is very low. International equity, you can see WCM is continuing to do quite well. They're about 12% of your international portfolio. You can see 3 months, 8.78 versus 4.6. Year to date, they're up almost 13%. Their benchmark's down 7. That's amazing to me. You look at the 1 year up 24.6. Their benchmark is flat. 2 years, 17 versus negative 0.43. And 3 years up just under 16% versus 0.6. They are one of our best active managers that we have. So that's helped your, obviously, top line return. Next page, please. This is just fixed income and alternatives. As you can see, total alternatives are about 20, just under 28% of the portfolio. So we're bumping up on that high end of our range. We're bumping up to that high end of our range, but again, that's been a good thing for us during this financial uncertainty in the markets. So we're very tactical on our allocation between things that are not in stocks or bonds, as well as overweighting the growth, large cap stocks, reducing our small cap and mid cap exposure. So that's what's helped your returns this year. Moving on, we could probably skip right through page. Or skip down to page 7 to just show some of where your hedge funds and cash. This just shows allocations. We don't need to spend a lot of time here. pie chart versus target allocation. So you can see where we're underweight and overweight. I don't need to spend much time here. Just change. I think we're pretty much done with this. This just shows linearly a bar chart of your returns versus your different benchmarks, your passive benchmark and your policy. And it does show the dark blue line is the fund. And it's nice to see the outperformance. So the fund overall has done very well. We're happy with what's going on here. And that's where we are.
Derek,
yes.
Derek, question. You may not know this off the top of your head, but of the alternative investments that SURF has, aren't most of them the type that if SURF wanted, they could cash in tomorrow and get their money? There are a couple that have a lock-in on it.
Yes.
You know, number one, I think we have some that don't have a lock-in in it. And the ones that do have a lock-in, to your knowledge, what's the longest period of lock-in?
Sure. Man, if you could go back to the report, I could go up to page, I think, 8. A couple more pages, please. I think it's page 8, maybe one more. Two more. Okay, so these right here, you can see SURF hedge funds. So of the alternative investments, just under 15% of them are in hedge funds. Those are all fully liquid. Within, I believe, there might be a 30-day liquidation. But they're for the most part, fully liquid. There are no lockups, no long-term commitments. They're long, so just refresh everybody's memory, they're long-short funds. So they try to, you know, they work in different ways, but Alcyon bets on stocks going up and also bets on stocks going down. So they make money on the longs and the shorts. That's why they're so unique. And their 1 year return is 54% versus 5 for their benchmark. Two years is 31%, 3 years is 23%. that's outstanding. And we've given them more money over time. So that's some of that active management that we've all been part of. You know, they've been doing well and we've given them more money, so that's helped your fund. Balyasny, that Atlas Enhanced, they're a long short fund as well, but they're more of the traditional hedge fund where they go long certain stocks and then they hedge the best on the short side. So they are, you know, somewhat market neutral, but they've still done well. Those hedges have paid off. So those two funds, Jerry, to your point, about 15% of the alternatives are fully liquid all the time with no lockups. So roughly just under $30 million. One page back, Leanna, please, page 6. So these alternatives do have, so these are your private investments that do have lockups, your private real estate, your private equity, they're fairly new to the fund. So it looks like it's about $23 million. Or roughly 14% of the portfolio, 13% of the portfolio. So 13% has lockup. So these things, just to refresh everybody's memory, both private equity and private real estate, what they do is they take the investor's capital and they through a series of capital calls, as they find new investors, they'll reach out to their investors and over time and deploy the money and invest it methodically in a very smart fashion. So your commitments to these funds versus what's actually deployed vary. There's something called a J curve there. So as these things are buying new investments and seeing them through the investment cycle, whether it's a private company or a piece of property, they vary. But we've been very cognizant of the longer lockups. I know, you know, the board has a preference to keep those lockups short. And I don't think we have any funds that are locked up longer than 6 to 7 years at the most. A lot of them are 10, with the exception of the fund we just hired. That was Fairview Capital. One of the things that they talked about in their presentation, Fairview has a 10-year lockup with various one-year extensions. That's the only fund that's been hired by this board that had a longer-term lockup. Other than that, they're, you know, six, 7 years tops. So that's it. Does that answer your question, Jerry?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. So now if we could move on to just the market.
Derek.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question? Can you just expand a little bit on the small cap, what you were talking about? You were talking about something.
Yeah, if you could just hold off, I'll talk about it right now, Mark. So I'm going to talk about the market. But, so this is the report that we show you every month. It's written weekly at our firm. It's quite good. It's quite accurate. We've really enjoyed reading it since we've joined the firm, and it's done really well. So this is through October 15th, so this is last Thursday. A lot has changed from, you know, we're looking at the September 30 report. Now this is through October 15th, and obviously today's, what, the 20th, so even this is a little bit stale. But what we've seen, if you've turned on the news at all and watch it, CNBC or any of the market commentary, you see that the market's been somewhat volatile. And so, you know, there's 3 weeks of a 9% run-up. We've given back about 1.5%, it's actually a little more now. But what we are seeing is, what's encouraging is the markets, when there are sell-offs, there are just as many investors there scooping up stocks at a sale price. So what we're not seeing is panic selling. We're not seeing huge depreciations in stock assets without, you know, people coming in and buying stocks on the other side. So that's encouraging to us. So there's really nothing that we're overly concerned with. We think this is fairly normal. It's digestion of earnings. And we're in the midst of earnings seasons right now. And a lot of the vast majority of stocks and companies are beating expectations or meeting expectations, which is very, very significant. When we see, you know, so if you look at the second paragraph, you see that, so moving averages are one thing we look at. The percentage of S&P 500 stocks above their 10-day moving average reached 94%. And any time that we've seen that, within the next 1, 3, 6, 12 months, there's significant outperformance. And when any time is it greater than a 90%, S&P has averaged 13.7% return in the next 12 months. So what we're seeing is some good things happening. Some quality earnings are coming out. Stocks are making money. Anytime there's a sell-off in stocks, there's people on the other side to buy up those stocks pretty quickly. So that's encouraging. You know, we still would like to see participation from other parts of the market rather than just large cap growth. If you look at that last paragraph, continued favor of large cap growth. Small caps are improving, but relative strength tends to keep us from being too aggressive yet. So our firm is starting to say, well, we're starting to see some improvement in small cap stocks, but, you know, we don't want to be too aggressive. We don't want to, you know, basically put all the chips in. We've been historically low weighted on our small caps. So I'm not even suggesting adding small caps to, I'm not looking to right size our position. I'm just saying, hey, let's just maybe add a little bit more money to small caps, because the markets move so quickly, and the dynamic of this board is we meet once a month, and we want to be ahead of a trend, not when it's too late. And things move so quickly, you know, we might sacrifice a little bit in the short term, but ultimately we feel what will help spur small cap stocks moving forward is if there's some sort of stimulus package. We think that, you know, it's very political, and we don't like seeing it when there's politics involved. It doesn't help. But we think ultimately there will be a stimulus package because so many Americans do need the stimulus. I think a deal will get done probably not until after the election, but that election's only, what, you know, a few weeks away. So we are not going to meet before that, the election. So yeah, we think small caps are improving. And one of the things we want to look at to help continue the portfolio to make money is to go where the ball, like Wayne Gretzky said, to go where the puck is going to be. Escape where the puck is going to be, not where it is. So we think small cap stocks are going to be a good winner for the marketplace in the coming weeks and months. So if you could turn to the next page, actually you could skip to three pages, which is technical on the top. One more, please. So this just graphically, one of the ways, so we look at stocks in various different ways. We look at, you know, the fundamentals, which are earnings and all the things I just talked about. But one of the, another way to look at stocks is technically, you look at stock trends. You know, there are trends, there are moving averages, there are things that happen. And a lot of this is even more pronounced today with all the different quantitative program buying. And you hear a lot about that on the news about, you know, these machine learning and the quantitative stocks buying and selling. A lot of these programs are here, they look at different support levels. When stocks reach this price buy, when they penetrate on the downside, this level, sell. And it happens quickly and it happens very aggressively. But what we're seeing here is a very, very good trending on the top chart there. We are really in a good trading range here. We're building bases and we're following trend lines. And as you can see, what we want to see is a consolidation in stocks before they trend higher again. And you can see that happening on the S&P 500 on that top line. So any of these sell-offs are normal digestion of previous strengths, and that's encouraging. We think there's potential for choppiness in the short term. We don't feel that the market's going to go straight up from here. So choppiness is normal. It's digestion, if you will, of information and earnings and so on and so forth. But ultimately, things look very good. The next page just shows the different moving averages that we talked about a minute ago. So, you know, there's a 10-day moving average, 20-day, 50-day, and 200-day. And you can see all of them are at the high range of where their stocks are finishing. So these are very, very good, you know, good signs. And statistically saying stocks have, when this happens, stocks do well. You know, you can see a win rate of 92% over the next 12 months when you see 92% win rate. 92% win rate. So 13.74% over the next 12 months is a high probability of that happening again. That's the average when these types of technical things happen in the market. So these are all bullish indicators, intermediate term, short to intermediate term. Next page. This just, again, Mark, to your question, just talks about small caps and technically what's happening. And you can see additional that bottom right-hand corner. So these are priced relative to S&P 600, which are small caps. And you can see the momentum is upwards. You need typically to break that blue line, but we're trending in that direction. And as you can see, the upper right, that's the small cap stocks. You can see the trend in small cap stocks is breaking upward. And that's a good sign as well. So we like what's happening. We're, you know, an early side of a small cap stock breakout, if you will. But we're pretty confident that it's going to happen, and I think it makes sense to participate in that upward move. Again, we're very, very low on the small cap allocation currently, under 3% of the portfolio. So what our recommendation is we should probably add another $5 million to small cap stocks. And where we would take it would be from large cap value, our passive large cap value stocks, which is about 18%. So we're going to reduce our, look to reduce our large cap value by 3% and get down capitalization of small cap core. And what's nice about our manager is they are small cap core, but they can tilt to growth or value depending on where they see opportunity. Historically, growth has been much better than value. And if you own small cap value, you got chewed up. If you own small cap growth, you've done well. Just like everything else in the market, growth has outperformed. So our manager, we have good faith in them. We think that they'll do well. And our formal recommendation is to take $5 million from large cap value passive index, the Russell 1000 value index, and add them to Fuller and Thaler. That's our recommendation. You can choose to do it. Again, I want to put a proviso that we know that it might be a little early, might be enough a little bit, but we think ultimately over the next coming months, 2, 3, 4 months, it will pay off, and it'll pay off, we think, pretty handsomely.
Eric, do you want to motion for that to happen?
Yes, if you so choose. I mean, that's our formal recommendation. We think it makes sense to add money to your small cap again for all the reasons that I talked about. We think the timing is a little early, but ultimately a good time to add exposure. So yes, that is our formal recommendation. You could choose to go with it or not. It's obviously up to you folks.
Mr. Chair, can I make a motion? Or?
Yes. What's your motion?
I'd like to make a motion that we follow the recommendation of Raymond James and move $5 million from our large cap. Was that large cap out there?
Yeah, large cap value, the passive large cap value.
Our $5 million from our large cap value and have it ready for small cap, please.
Motion is made. Is it second?
I second the motion.
Mario seconded it. Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion been properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Right. I'm going to call you out. Mark.
Aye.
Mike. Mike. Susan.
Aye.
Mario.
Aye.
Mike.
Must be on mute or something.
See him. I don't hear him.
Thumbs up.
Green.
He's an aye. Okay. Motion carries.
That concludes our presentation. Unless there's any questions, comments, concerns.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Are there any other? No other items, because we went under new business. There was nothing new. That being the case, I'd like to call for a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, this is Mark Petrosmal. I'd like to make a motion that we adjourn our meeting.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Mario seconds. Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion and properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? I don't think I have to go through each one of you for an adjournment. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good week.